here to support the advancement of women leaders. I am both a woman who spends a lot of time on issues that impact women and girls, both in my day job and outside of work through various organizations like Emerge, one of my fellow classmates from Emerge, which trains Democratic women to run for office, is in the audience today. And Actillion has been a sponsor of the Watermark Conference since its inception, and we're really proud to be a part of it and support the important work educating and allowing women to really get inspired and develop their careers. So again, thank you for your time. We have a really exciting hour ahead of us talking about overcoming the imposter syndrome and becoming an authentic leader. I'm excited to introduce to you Kim Azzarelli. Azzarelli is the co-founder of Seneca Women and co-author of the book Fast Forward. She is a business, philanthropic, and legal advisor on advancing women and girls. She's chair and co-founder of the Cornell Center for Women and Justice and a founder of Seneca Point Global. Previously, she served as SVP at Newsweek and the Daily Beast Company, and Women in the World, a conference I never miss. And she has held senior philanthropic and legal roles at Goldman Sachs and Avon. Azzarelli is also adjunct professor at Cornell Law School, where she teaches women, law, technology, and the economy. Please put your hands together for Kim Azzarelli.
Not really.
All right. Let's try to move this up. I was just laughing because my bio is so ridiculously long.
I hope we didn't put you to sleep. But I haven't been called Azzarelli since the basketball team, so I kind of enjoyed that. So thank you all for coming. I guess now it was the right height. It was just not on. Okay. Thanks so much for coming. I hope you've had a great morning already this morning. I am amazed every year to see how many women get up early in the morning and come out for this conference because this is really a moment of change that we're in. We are at this moment where we could actually do things differently. So let me first just briefly introduce our panelists, and then I'm going to tell you a little bit about what we're going to be talking about today. And we're going to have a nice dialogue, a fast-moving conversation, and then we want to open it up to the audience to participate. We want this to be a conversation, not a one-way environment. So with that, I might ask each panelist to quickly introduce themselves.
Hello, my name is Amy Trask. I don't know if this is on. I'm not in charge of making it on. He's in charge. My name is Amy Trask, and I'm thrilled to be here today. I've had an opportunity to say hello to so many of you that I saw at so many football games. I spent almost 30 years in the National Football League with the Los Angeles and then Oakland Raiders. I am currently a football analyst for CBS Sports Network, overcoming my greatest fear, which are cameras. And I am thrilled to be the chairman of the board of Ice Cube's new 3-on-3 basketball league. Oh, and I wrote my first book, You Negotiate Like a Girl. My next book, I've decided, is going to be a kid's book.
Great. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Komal Ahmed. I started a company called Copia, and we work with businesses that have excess food, and we connect that food to nonprofits that are in need when they're in need the most. And we'll feed 2 million people this year with food that would have otherwise been wasted.
It was so neat.
Thank you. And it's such a great honor to be here, and especially in the company of such badass women. So this is awesome.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
My name is Jackie Glenn, and I am the Vice President for Global Diversity and Inclusion at Dell Technology. And every year I come, it just gives me great pleasure to look out in the audience and see, as she said, BS woman. But I have been at Dell for 18 years. Doing a combination of diversity and inclusion and human resources. And I'm really looking forward to the dialogue.
So we have a really interesting topic today. We're focusing on what we're calling the imposter syndrome. And I'll give you a little background on that, and then I'll tell you about our panel and and sort of how we feel about the imposter syndrome.
It's very in and out.
Yeah, it's kind of
in and out.
Now it's in.
I asked for a lab because I'm Italian and I thought I could speak with my hands, but maybe I need a mic.
Why don't you take
it? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
We'll be right with you.
We're all friends here, so it's all good. Okay. All right, thank you. Now, this one's not on either, I don't think.
He's gonna turn.
Well, I have a pretty loud voice. I don't know if it's loud enough to reach the back of this room, but.
Should we try switching?
All right. Testing 1, 2, 3. Okay.
Boom.
Let's do it again. All right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So we're very happy to be here with you today. As they mentioned, I'm Kim Azzarelli. I'm the author of this book called Fast Forward, How Women Can Achieve Power and Purpose. And why I was excited to moderate this particular panel with these particular women is because in my travels working on this book, one of the big things that we talk about is knowing your power, finding your power, knowing your power, and then finding your purpose, and combining those two things, which we think is really powerful. So this idea of the imposter syndrome, though, is something that's a bit controversial. And I just came back from the World Economic Forum at Davos, where we launched a new campaign about the myths that are holding women back in the workplace. And one of the myths that we focus on is this idea that you have to fix the women. If women were just more confident, more ambitious, if they just, dare I say, leaned in more, then we could succeed. And of course it's true that we do our part, but the idea here is that it's not always about fixing the women, it's about fixing the system. And one of the issues that we talk about, and this is what we're going to get to today, is this idea of the imposter syndrome. And, you know, a lot of us face issues relating to the imposter syndrome, but what was really interesting, and I want to get right into it, is when I talked to these three incredible women leaders, we each had a different understanding of what the imposter syndrome was, A, and B, we weren't sure if it was true or not. So with that, let me just quickly ask you right away, what do you think the imposter syndrome is?
Well, as Kim and these terrific women know, I had no idea what that meant. I was invited to participate on this panel. I'm thrilled to be here, and I was told the panel was about the imposter syndrome. And being true to myself, I did no homework before the conversation with Kim, because I never did homework. And I didn't know what that meant, and I've since tried to learn a little bit about it. And I will simply share with you what I shared with Kim at the time. The best advice I ever received in my entire life to date was from my mom, who told me from the time I was this big, and as moms can do, she told me over and over and over again to the point where, oh, mom, and my eyes would roll up in my head. But the advice was, to thine own self, be true. And I will admit, although I see this as being recorded, so this will not go down in recorded history, it wasn't until I had almost graduated from Cal that I learned that it was actually Shakespeare who wrote that in Hamlet, and that my mom was in fact simply quoting what Laertes said to Polonius, or Polonius said to Laertes in Hamlet. But the fact is, I've never experienced what I understand now to be labeled the imposter syndrome as sort of generally agreed upon. Does that mean I always know what I'm doing? Of course not. I can't count the number of times where I think, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. But that's not gender specific. And you know what you do? You figure out what you're doing. So instead of feeling like an imposter, just figure out what you're gonna do like everybody else does, because let me tell you something. There's times when every single one of us feels like we don't know what we're doing. And you know what? We figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, this is really interesting because one of my favorite people is Dionne von Furstenberg. And those of you who don't know her, she's just an amazing person. And we were talking about this concept, and she said, you know what? Some days I wake up and I feel like a loser. You know, I feel like this is DBF, right? You're like, you feel like a loser. So I think what Tracy's saying is that this is the human condition. So we don't know if it's gender specific or not, and that's something that we, I think, agree upon here. Well, you had some really interesting perspectives on this when we asked you what you thought the imposter syndrome was.
Yeah, so to be truthful, I mean, I wasn't really supposed to be here. Let me explain. You know, as the daughter of South Asian parents, I had four very distinct career options growing up. Doctor, lawyer, engineer, or complete failure. And I always wanted to be a Bollywood actress. So, you know, now I'm doing something slightly more plausible, like solving world hunger.
And so, I mean, you know, this is something, this is an
Did
issue.
Did we have the same dad?
You know, this is an issue. World hunger is an issue that's existed since, you know, the beginning of time. And so many people have thrown so much money at it and tried to solve it. And yet here I am, you know, just unapologetically certain that this is something that we can solve in our lifetime. We waste 3 times more food than there are mouths to feed. It's not a lack of food that's the issue. It's just an ineffective distribution of that food. So hunger is not a scarcity problem. It's a logistics problem. And that's the logistics problem we went off to solve. And you know, there's no playbook for this. There's nobody I can, this is not like a T-Mobile, Verizon, there's like a competitor, you can take their playbook. Like, no, it clearly hasn't existed before. And so, you know, we're kind of making it up along. We're trying to take as many educated guesses as we can, but there's so many mistakes that I've made along the way. And they've somehow, all of them have led me here today. And I think it worked out.
Well, we think so too, and we're glad you're doing this, by the way.
Thank you.
Jackie, when we talked to you about the imposter syndrome, you had an interesting experience from a different vantage point. Again, all 4 of us had a different experience of the imposter syndrome. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So when I got the call that I was going to be on this panel, the first thing I do, Jackie style, was start talking to people about what comes to mind when you think of the imposter syndrome. And for those of you who don't know me, I hail from the sunny island of Jamaica. And so I gave this story when I first came here and I was in Boston. I used to hate speaking because you know, I just didn't like my beautiful accent. And so I remember once I was getting ready to speak at a conference or to a group of leaders, and normally what I would do is just rush through what I have to say because I don't want anybody to ask me where my accent is from. And this wonderful lady came over to me and she said, I just want to tell you something. Why don't you own your accent? She said, slow it down and use it as a vantage point. And that was maybe 20, 30 years ago. And I've really just sort of owned it. And I think when you think about the imposter syndrome, you think about people, underrepresented minorities and women. As I read through, because I did do a little bit of homework on it, I read through it. You look at people who, when you're in the room and you're the only one that looks like you, even if you don't know it's the imposter syndrome, you sort of start asking yourself, should I be here? Am I in the wrong room? Did they make a mistake? And I was reading, and there's a quote from Maya Angelou, and I won't take too long, but it says, I have written 11 books. And each time, I think they're going to find out and figure I'm running a scam. And so 11 books. And so, you know, if you think about it, for each of us, the imposter syndrome might mean something different. And as we go on today, I'll talk a little bit more about how do you overcome it and how do you quiet that noise in your head.
That reminds me of my favorite cartoon, which some of you know, which is a bunch of guys sitting around a table, a boardroom, and a woman at the table. And the woman makes a point, and the sort of gentleman leading the conversation says, that's a great point Jackie just made. Does one of the men in the room want to make it? And so this idea that you know, when you're the only, and you know, you're not heard, you start to question yourself. And I think that's very natural, and that's kind of what I think we all face that. And so I agree with that definition of the imposter syndrome. I think Amy's had another experience.
Yeah, I want to share my respectful disagreement with that, or at least my experience. I have never been in a room and once thought, oh, wow, I don't belong here, because I don't really care if anyone thinks I belong there. If I walk in a room, and look, I spent 30 years, almost 30 years, 29 years in the NFL, and there were umpteen times I was the only woman in a room. And I didn't care. And I never thought, do I belong here? Does anyone think I don't belong here? I don't belong here. Because I really didn't give a crap what anyone else thought. Maybe I shouldn't say crap on a microphone. Although when you're in the NFL, it gets a lot worse than that. You know, I never spent one moment during my career thinking about my gender. Because my view was twofold. If I didn't want anyone else thinking about the fact that I'm a woman, then what the heck am I doing thinking about my gender? And number two, I'm not gonna waste my time or my effort or my energy thinking about my gender, because you know what? If someone else wants to waste their time or their effort or their energy, have at it. Go ahead and waste your time.
So I hear what you're saying.
So let me just follow that up by saying you have a couple of advantages. First of all, I never question when I'm in a room because I know I belong there. But you're still the only one. And I'll go a little further, not to sort of get into a spirited dialogue with you, but when you're in a room, I will argue that you're probably the only woman, but you're amongst all white men. Let me finish my point. And so there's this need of, this old notion of belonging. So you're in there, and you maybe have the privilege of not thinking about your gender, but when I'm in the room and I'm the only woman with an accent and then with a color, I'm not like harping on it because I own who I am as a woman of color, but sometimes you stop and you're thinking, oh my goodness, do they realize what this room is made up of? And do they see? So that's the point I'm trying to make, right. But I know that I belong there.
Please understand, I'm not questioning that or suggesting that anyone who experiences that is not absolutely right and legitimate. I'm simply saying, I think, and maybe it's a failing of mine, I don't really give a crap what anyone thinks of me, and I never have. And by the way, I work for Ice Cube, so I kind of get that.
Oh, all righty.
Well, I think I'm going to try to... this is good. This is healthy, spirited dialogue. This is what we want at 10 o'clock in the morning, because otherwise we'll all be asleep. But also, I mean, I think that there's something to each person having their own experience. I think, and I'm not trying to play favorites, don't get me wrong, but I think what I was just going to say was that after being on the road for all these years talking about this book and spending my really career since I left Avon, the company for women, if we have any Avon people here, but since I left Avon, I've been really sort of traveling the world, talking to people, working in different environments, and I'm a high-yield bond lawyer, so I understand what it means to be the only woman in the room. Growing up in the high-yield bond area. But I do think that there is a dynamic that happens, and I think your strength probably is the fact that you have that constitution where you don't feel it, you know what I mean? But I think for a lot of us, we do see the difference and we feel the difference, and frankly, I think the evidence shows that we're treated differently, and I think that's why I love that cartoon, because it just shows, when I talk about that cartoon, it doesn't matter whether the woman's a CEO or entry level. Everyone has experienced that where they make a point, their point is not heard, somebody else makes the point, you're like, I just made that point, what the hell? And so there's this great, in the Obama administration, they had this great tactic called amplification, where I love this, right? Which is, that's a great point that Jackie just made, glad you want to build on it, And so we kind of create this buddy system. So that's a real great tactic that we can use. But Kamal, maybe you can tell us your experience and sort of, you're kind of maybe a different generation than us. You're coming up in a different world. I mean, what are you seeing as you're going out to forge new ground? Are you finding that in the tech world, because you're trying to leverage a lot of technology, are you finding that you're sort of different and forging something new and trying to translate for people?
Yeah, so I mean, of course, I work in technology, and Copia is not a nonprofit. We are a for-profit company. And so you're also sharing with the world that you can both do well and do good at the same time. And that's a very new concept. And I think, I will definitely resonate here. Most of the time when I'm speaking to a room full of people, they are mostly men. They're mostly older white males. And even there's most of the conferences that I speak at, most of the panels that I speak at, I'm the only woman there. And that has less to do with imposter syndrome, but I think that also, I don't think that this is a gender-specific thing. I think everybody, maybe not you, and you're very fortunate in that, but I think everyone at some point in their life, even on my way to the stage, I was like, I'm not sure if I'm going to be on this stage, I don't know. But, you feel it, and I think there is something to be said about owning that and using those things as an advantage. I think it's never been a better time in human history to be a woman, ever. I don't think there's been a better time in human history to be a woman of color. I am gonna own it because I can't wash this color off of me. I'm not gonna be a different gender. This is who I am, and how can I use that as my greatest strength, as my greatest advantage? I think now more than ever, you see even in portfolios and investment portfolios, they need to have women, they need to have diverse representation. So let's own it, let's make it our own, and let's take advantage of that.
Amy, what tactics have you used besides your natural personality, which is awesome because obviously you have that naturally where you're not. Are there things that motivated you throughout your career that made you sort of get that confidence to say, I'm pushing through, and you negotiate like a girl's name in your book, so that's a really interesting question.
And I don't know if it's confidence or stubbornness, because there's all sorts of things in the world I lack confidence when I do. And I want to be very, very clear. There's a whole heck of a lot of times every week where I think, I don't know what I'm doing, but I know I can figure it out, or, wow, this is something new. It's not that I have confidence that I can do every task in front of me. It's that I really don't care what anyone else thinks. So I want to be clear that it's not a confidence level that I'm necessarily up to a task. Look, let me also say this. I had a tremendous, tremendous privilege, and I recognize this. Some of you are Raider fans. Some of you hate the Raiders. Some of you loved Al Davis.
Some of you don't know who they are.
Some of you couldn't stand him. Some of you love NWA and Ice Cube. Some of you don't like the rap genre. But let me tell you something about these men for whom I've had and have the privilege of working. They weren't bothered by my gender. They weren't concerned by my gender. And I get it. To the women in the room, I get it. Not everyone has the privilege of the pleasure of working for people who don't give a damn about race, gender, ethnicity, religion, or all those differences and individualities which have no bearing whatsoever on whether we can do a job or not. I think what I just want to try to make clear is it's not that I don't recognize that these issues exist. Of course they exist, and of course I recognize it. It's that I really just don't give a damn what someone who doubts me thinks of me. Because if someone thinks I don't belong in a room, I don't really care if he or she thinks I don't belong in a room. I'll figure out how to get my job done.
And the market doesn't care, right? It doesn't care what your gender is. It doesn't care what your ethnicity is. If you're creating a business that has value and that is bringing value to others, it doesn't really matter.
So, you know, as I did some research on this, I spoke to quite a few people, and there's four stages that you go through in your career. Stage one, which I know there might be a few of you in the room where you're new to your career, you're just getting started, and, you know, you really want to get to a place where you don't care. But for now, you're in a room, and you have to care because you're trying to build your career. Stage two, you're there, you're still trying to navigate it, and then so on. It's stage three, and then stage four. And I was listening to Denzel Washington, and he said he's in the fourth quarter of his career. And what he did in the first quarter of his career, he's not trying to do it now. So, and in the fourth quarter of your career, maybe the imposter syndrome is, I might have a little doubt. I remember 2 years ago I was on a panel and one of the author wrote a book, The Bee in My Head. And it really, I don't want to be incorrect, so I won't say the full word, but you guys get it. And it really is quiet. By the time you get to stage four, you've quieted that noise in your head. But I want it to be really inclusive of everyone that's here in the audience and at the conference, that some of us are new to our career. And so there, I know I have two daughters, and I have this conversation with them all the time about being in room, feeling like they don't belong there, what should they do? And I think as we think about the topic, I want to make sure that I am being very inclusive to everyone in all the different stage of their career. And maybe you can get to a point in your career like us where we do walk into a room and we don't really give a But I know that some of us are still trying to walk that journey, and I want to be conscious of that.
Yeah, and I actually would think, I totally agree. I think that, I actually find that it may not even be stage specific because, again, I've talked to so many people, and people at all levels of their career have different experiences where, you know, the best piece, first of all, the best piece of advice Amy said she got was from her mother. Who feels the same way? The best piece of advice they ever got was from their mother.
I did.
Yeah.
A lot of them. Yeah.
The piece of advice that I got from my mother, which really resonates with me, which I think is kind of relevant to what we're talking about, is this idea that you have to get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yes.
Because I
yes.
think whenever you're striving for something new, or even not new, you know, you can be uncomfortable. And I think, you know, I think that's the human condition. And so for me, I think, you know, what I found is that, I think it goes back to two things that were said earlier. One is know your own power in the sense that know your strengths and play to your strengths, but then also know your weaknesses, right? Know how to surround sound yourself so that you know, you have some balance, and everybody has strengths and everybody has weaknesses, and that's, again, the human condition. And if we're honest with ourselves, we can play to our strengths and own who we are, and that authentic self really does make a difference. And then the other thing that you said was that we're at this sort of unique moment in history where we've never had the chance to be more powerful as women of color. In general, diversity has never had a bigger opportunity to have impact. And I think we've made the business case. The business case is clear. Diversity matters. And I was, when we were on the book tour, I was giving a talk at one of the big tech companies, and there was a nice white gentleman, and he said, listen, I do not have a diverse team, and I'm going to lose because of this, because I don't understand my market.
Hello.
I feel like Adele. Hello. So, you know, this idea that having diverse viewpoints changes everything. And I think that most business leaders understand today that unless you have that, you cannot win. You just cannot. Hello. So, the idea is that if you don't have a diverse viewpoint, you can't win in this economy, and you can't win in the world. And so I think there's a clear business imperative at this point. It's empirical from the World Bank to the World Economic Forum. I mean, the World Bank, for crying out loud, knows that gender equality is smart economics. So I think we are at this unique place in history where we could actually break through.
Well, the way I like to articulate that is if you are a business and you are not hiring without regard to race, gender, ethnicity, religion, or all these individualities which have no bearing, as I said, on whether someone can do a job, well, then you deserve to fail. Because you are, by definition, eliminating enormous swaths of talented people. And, you know, to those who do have some level of concern, whether when they walk in a room, am I an imposter, do I belong here, or are concerned about what others think, I use a movie that's my favorite movie, Apollo 13. And when I've talked to younger people about this, I've said, when those men in Apollo 13 thought that they might be stranded and never make it back to Earth, do you think they gave a damn whether the people who figured out a way to get them safely back to Earth were men, women, yellow, green, pink with purple polka dots, Muslim, Jewish, atheist, agnostic, Hindu, Buddhist. They didn't care. Get me back to Earth alive. And that's an attitude that I think people who are a little nervous walking into a room can remember that scene and remember those men in Apollo 13 didn't care what the color of the skin, the religion, the ethnicity, the gender was. They just wanted to get home.
I think one of the things that I've really taken, and not to get political, but if Trump can be president, we can do anything. Like, we can do anything. And I mean, clearly you don't have to have a competency level. You have to own it. I mean, if I think the world sometimes tries to tear you down, why would you try to tear yourself down? And I've tried to. I think that, like, you know.
Mike, we're losing our audience.
You know what? Say that over, because that was beautifully said about tearing yourself down. Yeah. So here, use this.
Thank you. You know, I think the world tries to tear you down. Why would you try to tear yourself down? Why would you get in your own way? And I think that's one of the most important things, is to just get out of your own way, get out of your own head. You're here. You made it. You made it this far. And I mean, I think it's just, you know, and I also read something recently. It was like, I think it was Will Smith who said this. He's like, I never, you know, my father told me to, you know, he had to construct a wall. And he's like, how am I going to do this? There's no way I can construct this entire wall in one summer. And he's like, the way you can do it is saying, like, I'm going to lay this brick as perfectly as it can be laid. And then I'm going to lay the next one the next day, and then the next one. And it's not that you're amazingly going to have it all figured out, but by step, it'll build upon one another, and you will eventually get to the point where that entire wall will be built.
Yeah. Okay. So I have two daughters, and I was just thinking about what your mom, by her, be true to thyself, and I am going to get a little bit into the Bible part, because I remember my mom always said to me, you know, you can do all things. to Christ who gives you strength. And so whenever I am anywhere and I'm feeling a little giddy, even just walking up to the stage or I'm going into a meeting and I know it's going to be a little bit tense, I sort of kind of recite that to myself. And I say that to say that everyone has something. If it's a lucky charm that you rub on before you step on the stage, or you say a quote from your mom, or something. I remember when both my daughters were going off to college, I gave them each this Bible, and I put in it Jeremiah 29:11 for those of you who know it, and it says, you can do, I know the plans I have for you. And I think you really have to sort of, as you said, strengthen yourself with whatever you believe in. So because the world is going to try to tell you you're not that good, and you have to know that you are that good. So really just following back up on what
you
said.
That really ties really closely to the research that we did for the book. It wasn't sort of necessarily religion specific, right, but I think there was a spiritual component in the sense that this idea that happiness, how does one achieve happiness mm-hmm. in their life and in their work? And what we talk a lot about, and what I really very much resonates with what you just said, is this idea of finding purpose, right? And when you have that larger arc of purpose in your life, things dimensionally change. And I found that in researching the book, there are actually professors of happiness. And I always say my next life, I want to be a professor of happiness, because that sounds like a great gig. But the fact that happiness is pretty empirical, and it really ties to what you just said. What is the larger arc of your life? What is the meaning? And what can you bring? Everybody can find their own purpose, to your point. It can be whatever it is for you. But if you find that purpose and you can tie it to your life and your life's work, it changes everything. And it comes back to something you said earlier, too, which is getting outside of yourself. Right. If you can use what you have, your strengths, your power, for something larger than yourself, I say using your power for purpose, but it's just said in a lot of different ways. That is something different. And I feel like, Kamal, you found that in...
You find your why.
You find your
why. Reason for
why
being.
Why are we here? Exactly.
Why? Yeah, your reason for being. Why do you get out of bed every morning? And it's not for me. It's something so much greater than me. I could have done clean water. I could have become a doctor.
a Bollywood actress.
I could Bollywood, sure. But I found this accidentally, you know. It was just one random lunch that I had with who ended up being a homeless veteran, and being so shocked when I heard a story that he hadn't eaten in 3 days. And I thought, like, this is someone who had given the greatest sacrifice for our country, only to come home to face yet another battle, that of hunger and even of homelessness. And then adding insult to injury, right across the street, Berkeley's dining hall was throwing away thousands of pounds of perfectly edible food. And so it was this very stark reality of those who have and waste and those who are in need and starve, and those two people right across the street from one another. And, you know, I realized shortly thereafter it's emblematic of a much larger problem, and that is, like I said before, we waste three times more food than there are mouths to feed. And so for me, it could have been anything, but it was this one fateful lunch that changed the entire trajectory of my life. And now I don't know if there's anything else I could do than to achieve this and to really solve this in my lifetime. So it's not about optimism or pessimism. It's like I am hell-bent on making this happen.
And I think each of us, you know, don't have to necessarily start an incredible organization that's
no, absolutely not. Yeah.
Although, thank God you are. But I think each of us can do something from where
we
sit.
I know, I'm about to put this mic down and leave the stage because I'm listening to you solving world hunger, and I'm like, I spent almost 30 years figuring, how do we win this game?
it could be
get
a game
to watch.
Yeah.
So I want to open it up to the audience. Yeah. If there are questions, we'll be happy to take them, or comments. We'd be happy to take that, too. Yes, go ahead.
Already here waiting. Can you hear me?
A little bit.
A little bit.
I came here early because I think you guys are having a wonderful conversation, but I wasn't sure if it was too relevant for a lot of our experiences, and I wanted to give you guys that context so you can perhaps add more or share your tactics, etc. I think a lot of us, when we come into workforce, don't come in doubting ourselves. I don't think we come out of colleges that way. You know, I agree with you that there are four stages of our career. I felt like I was very optimistic and a lot more bonhomie in my first stage, and then you go to second stage, and then you keep going higher. And as you keep going higher, something's happened to you. No matter what you believe in, no matter how well you perform, no matter how great you are, you don't move or something's happened to you, you don't get that promotion, you don't get recognized. A lot of those things happen. And when those things happen, there's no one to tell you what really led to that decision. And it may be you, you know, and it's possible, but it may not be you.
Yeah.
But the natural conclusion we always come to it is me.
Totally agree. Yeah. So I'm going to just repeat the, question for the others. So, yeah.
Just to finish my thought on that is, that's what is imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
The imposter syndrome comes in because you don't know what stopped you. There's no one telling you what stopped you. You don't know what to fix. You suddenly think, I'm not good enough.
Right.
And there are a room full of people who you don't think deserve a spot, who've gone up, and you don't know what that is. And if it's a male, and if it's somebody else, if it's someone who looks smarter, looks better, you think it's because they look better. Maybe it's because they're a male. And so, you know, I think that's the challenge.
Yeah, it erodes it. I mean, I think that's what I was trying to get at, fix the women versus fix the system. We are told that if we just fix ourselves, but there are systemic issues happening, and that's what I was trying to get to with the cartoon, right? The cartoon, you think that you're not a good presenter because people aren't recognizing your point in the meeting, and then you find out, actually, the CEO, who's a woman, also gets talked over in the meeting. So then you realize this is a systemic problem. It's a design flaw. So I think, Jackie, you had a point on this.
I was going to say, that's what I was getting at when I said that, you know, there, you hit the nail right on the head about being somewhere and things happen and no one is telling you. And I have this saying that you have to ASK to GET. And I think that there's a lot of studies out there that show that men and women, underrepresented minority and women, don't get proper feedback. And I just keep asking. Ask why, and I think people get really uncomfortable when you ask them why you didn't get the job, or why. And you make it so, it's sort of like a thing where they know you're gonna ask them. A lot of times when I coach younger people and they said, oh, Mrs. Glenn, I went for that job and I didn't get in. And I said, did you ask them why? And they're like, no, I didn't think of asking them why. And so my answer to that would be to not give up and to keep asking. The one of the words that I live by is resilient.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to be resilient. And if you went for a job and you didn't get it, you go for the next one, or you move, but you always want to know. And you also have to be open to taking feedback, because sometimes people ask why and they don't really want the answer. So they're like, oh my God, why did you? Well, no, you asked me why and I tell you. And so if you're gonna ask people why that you work for and work with, be open to receiving the feedback.
That's a great point.
Thank you.
You're next.
She kind of just echoed what I was about to ask you guys, but I would love to hear further discussion about tactics, because I feel the same. I went into work in tech really confident, and I'm in a marketing and PR industry and find out men doing the same job as me are making 60 grand, if not more, than I am. So it happens across all industries. I've also had myself and women being a mom have that thrown in our face, and I've had feedback from peers, all men, saying, you're too confident, you're too ambitious, and then other feedback saying, no, you're not confident enough, you're not ambitious enough. And I think companies are becoming a little bit more woke in the last few years, so that the ambitious thing and the confidence thing aren't maybe showing up in our reviews. But I believe imposter syndrome is coming from outside, and it's years and years and years hitting you, so that someday you walk in and it's your voice saying you're not confident enough, and that was never there before. And I've had managers apologize for keeping that now, and years later say, I'm really sorry I let that peer review come in, because I don't think you have a problem. I think you should be ambitious and you should be confident. So I think if people are backtracking, but I would love to hear tactics of when you're not fortunate enough to work with men who support you, or even women. What do you do to sort of stop your voice from, or stop yourself from absorbing that? And it does make you more, it does make you stronger and resilient. I've gone off and started my own business, but not everybody here gets the chance to go start their own business. They have to stay at that company and they have to stay with those managers. So I'd love to just hear some tactics. Thank you.
I'll offer one, because you did reference that I have had the privilege of working with some men who were unconcerned with my gender. It doesn't mean that all the men I've worked with have been unconcerned with my gender. And so my tip for you in that is, and I don't know how you do this, I don't know how you translate this, but certainly I've interacted with men who did care about my gender, although they weren't ultimately the owners of the businesses for which I worked. You gotta find a way not to care. Now look, let me divide that in two places. If that person is determining your salary or determining your upward trajectory, then by definition, that person has an impact on your role. But if that person is simply a colleague or a peer, just, I don't know how to say stop caring, because that's very hard to implement. But at the end of the day, if you can tune out the noise of people who don't have the power to control your trajectory and not give a damn what they say or what they think, don't let them stand in your way. They're just like, they're little speed bumps. They're just, think of, I mean, next time someone interfaces with you, like, it's a speed bump. So what do we do when we see a speed bump in the road? Either speed up and go over it and take the bump, or go around it, or slow down and go over it so you don't damage your car. But it's a speed bump. And guys, I'm not trying to minimize these bumps. In some situations, these bumps are mountains, and I get that. But in other situations, sometimes simply saying, I'm not going to let you stand in my way. I'm not going to spend a moment of my time worrying about what you think about me. I'm going to be the one who gets that Apollo 13 back on Earth.
Jackie.
So I know you took your seat, but I have a real quick story because I love to tell story. I remember years and years ago when I just started my career, and as I came into the job that was advertised, I realized real quickly, and this was when I was much younger, that the job that was advertised for, they actually brought me in a level below it. And so instead of getting all crazy, I just decided, okay, I'm just going to show them what I can do. So I did the job for a year, and then I went to my manager, because I think a lot of times people just sort of take it and go home and they don't really say anything. I went to my manager and I said at the time, and I know he wouldn't mind if I called it, I said, Jack, I have the job description and the advertisement, and I just want to understand why I wasn't brought in as a senior HR manager. And he told me some type of thing that it didn't make any sense. So I took it and I said, I'm going to finish out this year and then I want you to tell me why I shouldn't have the senior next to my name. And I remember each time I moved, I would have to go back to him. And I think the word is relentless. And I remember once I went to him and he was trying to figure out why he didn't give me the job. And he was like, well, nobody knows you. And I know this is going to sound horrible, but I'm going to say it. He said, oh, you know, you got to know people. You got to socialize around here. Relationship is really big. I said, come on, Jack. If for nothing else, I'm the only tall black woman with an accent here. So everybody knows who I am. And that just like shut him down. And then he said something again about, you know, people think I was too strong and in your face. And I'm like, I work with sales guys. If you go there and you're weak, they're going to ask you to leave their organization. They want me. And so my advice would be is to everyone in this room, sort of what you said, is to be relentless. And I think it's hard. I have two young daughters, and it's hard for me to tell them to not give a damn. I sort of kind of tell them that, but I don't, because sometimes you have to. If you're a single mom, you're the only one who's making a living, you got to pay your kids' tuition, you sort of kind of have to. So you sort of have to figure out a strategy that you can use when you go in there. And the word is, you know, relentless, but do it nicely. You know, I told my daughter the other day, she asked me, should she call about this job? And I said, how much time have you called them? And she said, like, three times this week. And I said, Alicia, why don't you wait every Friday at 10 o'clock and call them? So they know they're going to have an answer to you before that. So that's the relentless piece.
Yeah, I just want to acknowledge whoever that was. I had the same exact experience when I was a young lawyer, and they tell me one week I was too aggressive, the next week I didn't have enough bravado. I'm like, well, which is it? Like, I can't be both at the same time. So I do think you're right. There are these, I keep going back to the same, there are systemic issues that actually I think we're at this place where we're starting to battle. But for me, and this is a shameless plug, but for me, I think this concept of connecting with other people who share your values and give you energy, you've got to find energy somewhere, because life is hard. You know, you don't wake up in the morning every day and feel like it's great and it's easy. I think all of us face difficulties every day and on the things that we're talking about. So I think if you can find other people, like-minded people who can give you some energy, that helps. We are releasing something in a couple weeks that we're calling Collective Wisdom, and it's basically tips around these areas, collective wisdom of all these different women, because I think a lot of people in this room would have great advice, and we can start sharing them. And I think the Amplification Pack is one. The Obama administration did that beautifully, and there's so much that we can do, but we have to be tactical at this moment, and at the same time, we have to try to shift perspectives. I feel like we have to go to this mic because we didn't pull from anywhere over there.
Okay, hi. So my question is about navigating being held responsible for other people's perception of you rather than what you're actually doing or your work product or how much customers love you or whatever. But again, this idea of being direct and honest and kind, but direct, and how there are people who don't appreciate that. And so, I'm just gonna lay it out. At 51, you know, there have been multiple times I've been passed over because of this, and I've held in there and been persistent and relentless, and yet I'm still in the same spot. And so I would just really be interested in any, you know, tactical ideas you have around navigating this, being responsible for other people's perception of you. So I'm right with you about not caring. However, if I don't, I don't go anywhere. So I'm not sure how to navigate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your question. So, again, on a very personal note, yesterday my COO, someone who's been with the company for 2+ years, you know, said he was going to leave the company. And in that moment, it felt like the entire world was crashing around me. This is the only other C-level person. Like, he, you know, manages finance and operations and product. I'm like, how am I gonna make this work? And also, like, he's so instrumental in the company and has been in the company's success that what is the rest of the team gonna think? Are they gonna think that, like, this company isn't gonna be successful anymore? Are they gonna think that, like, we don't know what we're doing and I can't do it? I mean, I get it. I get that feeling. I felt it this morning. I felt it yesterday. I felt like, what if we have to close up shop? And it was, you know, it was my mom that actually said it too to me this morning. She's like, what are you talking about? You brought this here. It's because of you that this even exists. It's because of you that you haven't made it this far. And so, you know, hopefully my employees aren't watching this because they don't know yet. But
camera.
But I mean, I think that there is something to be said, and I have to manage their expectations. I have to manage their opinions too. I have to care about them. I have to, because they are the ones who are also helping me along this journey to make this happen. And you know, the first thing I did when I found out, I called like a bunch of my advisors and some of my investors and said, like, what do I do? They're like, this is normal. This happens. This is not, your company is not over. This is not a huge, massive scandal. It's just people leave. People come and people go, and you're going to make this work. I think for me, too, I don't have any other option. Right. And what am I going to just stop? It's kind of ridiculous.
Well, I don't know how to answer the question about the criticism you've received for being too direct. I've been told that I'm direct to a fault.
Yeah.
I don't think that's possible. I think the world would be a lot better if we were all more direct with one another.
Yes. Agreed.
But I will tell you, there have been times I've gotten in my own way by being more direct than people like, and you know what? That's fine with me.
Yeah, I mean, I think transparency is huge, for sure.
So one tip I would give you is that I think everyone gets to a point in their career where they have to make a decision. And so, you know, if you look up in the dictionary for the word direct, my face probably will be there. I'm direct to a fault. That's why we probably are on this panel together. But I think that over the years, I've learned how to be a lot more direct, but I somewhat ask people for permission to be direct because everybody can't take it. Everybody will tell you they want to hear it. And then I always say, you know, I want to give you some feedback. Would you like? People have told me no before. Don't tell me, Jackie. I don't want to hear it. But to the lady over here, I would say it's time for you to sort of evaluate if that's where you're supposed to be and really think about it, because you might end up with the answer that that's exactly where you're supposed to be, or you should leave and look for something else somewhere else, because everyone knows when it's time to leave, and everybody knows when it's time to stay. So I think you have to do some soul searching on whether or not that's what you want to do. Do you want to stay, or do you want to go? Or is there someone in your organization that you can speak to about what it is that's holding you back?
So we have like less than 5 minutes, and I feel we have to call on this side of the room, because we have, just to be fair and equitable, we have a book signing after this, so I think all of us are happy to continue the conversation at the book signing, but let us let you ask the last question.
Crowdsource a few of these questions at once.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to give a different perspective on imposter syndrome. In growing up within a family that had no expectations of my going to college, part of it was their educational background, economics. High school tracking me as non-college track, telling me I wouldn't be able to go to college, and then going to college and being there and thinking, I've been told all my life up to this point that I don't belong here. So having mentors, role models that, you know, followed non-traditional paths, people respecting, you know, that I feel that way, were all important. And
thank you for that.
My sixth grade teacher told my mom I'd never make it to college. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Well, I think we're kind of coming to the close of what we're doing today. It's been amazing to have all these people, and actually, I wish we could go on for the rest of the day. We have 3 more minutes. Maybe we'll let you ask the final question.
Thank you. One of the things that's really resonating with me today is my definition of imposter syndrome may be very different from other people in this room. As much as I hear about not caring about other people, I think imposter syndrome is very internal for me and probably for a lot of people. It's actually when you do have a mom or a coworker or somebody who believes in you and opens doors for you, you questioning yourself, am I ready for this? So for me, one of the things I really wanted to hear from you guys is when you've had those moments of like, wait, why am I here? Wait, can I do this? How did you challenge yourself, move beyond that, and do it anyway? And, you know, what are those moments for you that you had to overcome that would really help us in the room get that moment of being brave and stepping forward anyway?
So I'm going to translate that into the last, each of us gives one tip. I think that relates to imposter syndrome since we're here to talk about it. Do you want to go first?
The answer to that question is precisely the answer to that question, which is honesty. And what I found what worked for me was when I was in a situation, call it imposter syndrome, call it whatever you want, where I thought, I don't know how to do this. I don't know if I'm up to this task. I was very honest about that with my colleagues, with my coworkers, with people senior to me, junior to me, my teammates, and I said, I'm not quite sure how to do this. Let's figure it out together. In other words, I was very vocal about saying, I got to figure this out. It's okay not to know how to do something. It's okay to say, you know what, this is a challenge I've never faced before, because you can do it. Just own that you need to figure it out, and figure it out however is best for you. I did it with teamwork.
I totally agree, absolutely. You know, I was actually doing this really big presentation, both for an investor and actually for a customer too. And they asked, you know, how do we know that you're gonna be around? How do you know we're gonna make this work, et cetera, et cetera. And I, you know, looked at them directly in their eyes and I said, you know, his name was Mike. I was like, Mike, I have crawled through the pit fires of hell to even be sitting in front of you. So I'm gonna make this work. It's about whether or not you're gonna be part of this journey. And I think he was so stunned. He was the president of the company. He was so stunned that I would even, the pit fires of hell to make this happen. And it's, adversity is just part of life. Like, fail your way to success. It is inevitable. And if you aren't, you know, I do think that if you're not terrified, you're probably not growing as much as you should be.
Agreed.
So you actually said what I was going to say, and it's feel the fear, but do it anyway. And I think that someone asked me how I, you know, if I'm nervous. Every time I go up, every single time I get to do something where I'm in front of a large group of people, I'm always nervous. But you have to just take that nervousness or that fear and channel it anyway. Also, you really have to work hard. I mean, I know this is old school and everybody's like, oh my God, here comes the old lady, but do your job. Work, work, work. Someone was telling me the other day, you really have to do your job.
Work as hard as you can. Hard work matters. And when you think you can't work any harder, find a way to work harder. And just to answer that question again, just recognize you're not the only one who thinks, I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
Everybody has to figure out challenges.
Thank
you. Not just you.
We have a toolkit in our book, and we're crowdsourcing all these tips. So you can go to senecawomen.com to find out more, and we don't have time. But my one parting thought would be, you know, again, know your own power. Be honest with yourself about your strengths. Find your purpose. And frankly, again, get comfortable being uncomfortable, because growth is about that. And if you fail fast and fail forward, that's part of life. And we're all feeling that every day. And just find other people who share that with you, because everybody feels it. And when you are in groups and you start to get energy from each other, it gives you the motivation to keep going. With that, I hand it to you.
Okay, so I'd like to thank all of you for spending the time with all of us. I want to thank our speakers one more time. A round of applause for them. And as mentioned, our speakers will be signing books over in the exhibit hall, so feel free to stop by, ask more questions, get your book signed, and check your programs or the mobile app to figure out your next session. Thank you.